Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of the show, recognize they're on a dangerous path and make a difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is Part Sinner, Part Saint on Late Night Poets After Midnight. I'm Aphasiana, and with me I have Babbler. Hello, Babbler.
Hello. How's it going?
Well, you know, surviving. How about you?
I hope I'm surviving.
I hope you're
so long. Tired of
I
you.
Feel ya. Mm-hmm.
I did get my voice back just like literally yesterday, so that's good. Well, mostly I still sound a little weird to myself, so.
You're a little bit scratchy, but I don't know. It's kind of cool. It's got a bluesy quality to it.
I guess that's good.
Yeah. Tonight is kind of a special edition, Part Sinner, Part Saint. We are going to be reading gold winners from past contests of the show. Everything we're going to do tonight is a gold winner. So these are our shining stars, our writers. Some of it goes from way back, because I've been doing this for about 3 years, and I started back at the beginning of when I started making lists of who won my contests. not quite at the very beginning of when I was a host, but pretty close.
That seems like a good place to start, right?
Yeah. All right, so our first one is by, and maybe I should give a little context of the poem. So this was for the contest, which was art, and the art was by Scott Sheedley, and there were some paintings of women who were part animal or plant. There were plants and animals worked into their hair and sort of like where their jewelry would have been. So that was the inspiration. And the poem is, "Oh, I know you fear us. Oh, I know you fear us. You do not want to kneel before the goddess, the terrifying depths you crave. You dream of coral tentacles gripping and pulling you under, of mouths rimmed by flashing teeth, glowing abyssal monstrosity. But in the feverish starfish night, you sweat and cannot help but come to sip our excruciatingly sweet nectar. Tiny hummingbird heart about to burst, you fear the mantis, the widow, all nature's feral queens gnashing the carnivorous snap of fleshy petals. So you are wary, blushing matador. You don capes to add to your girth, sawing, shaving, filing off our horns bit by bit by bit in a fearful frenzy. But the crown does not make us. It will grow back anyways, sprouting taller in anger and defiance. Your comfortable pretty is not beautiful, and in your center you know it. Why else would you forget the perfect warm caves and the build towers to touch the sterile sky? They will topple, as all vertical things do, and you will join us in a level embrace, lying in the bejeweled serpent's lap, nipping teeth, caressing tentacles, grazing horns will bring you only pleasure, and you will joyously die and be reborn light as the smoke from a sacred fire in the unmaking of an eternal fertility ritual. And floating in the celestial lights, you will live between dusk and dawn." End poem.
Well, fantastic reading to Faziana. And I also want to note the art for this contest is gorgeous, really beautiful. I love that this piece to me is about being afraid, essentially, of beautiful and powerful women. You know, and to know that you want them, you know, the terrifying depths that you crave, you dream of coral tentacles gripping and pulling you under, of mouths rimmed by flashing teeth, glowing abyssal monstrosity. You know, it's this want paired with this fear, you know, being afraid of something that you view as powerful and dark and unknown. And so you cut them down, you know. And reduce them to something lesser. Your comfortable pretty is not beautiful, and in your center you know it. Why else would you forget the perfect warm caves and build towers to touch the sterile sky, like to escape that dark beauty, to you know, not want to be afraid, to be so afraid of the unknown that you destroy it, essentially. And then, yeah, at the end of the poem, it's like to fall back into it, you know, like it's inevitable because these things are powerful. You know, it's sensual, but it's dark. And not overly sensual. I like that it's kind of subtly, you know, nipping teeth, caressing tentacles, grazing horns will bring you only pleasure, and you will joyously die and be reborn, light as the smoke from a sacred fire, in the unmaking of an eternal fertility ritual, and floating in the celestial lights, you will live between dusk and dawn. You know, when you stop being afraid of strong and powerful beauty, if you stop being afraid of the things that you want, and instead embrace them, there's empowerment in that in itself. I really enjoyed this write. I thought it was very well done. I can see why you gave it gold. You read it. What did you think?
I love it. There's a line, all nature's feral queens gnashing the carnivorous snap of fleshy petals. I love that so much. Like, years ago I commented, that should have been the prompt. That line right there could be a prompt that got lots of people going. And I'm really impressed because Arendt's managed to combine all the images in this. It's like a little bit from everything went together, because they do have similar themes across the images, but this really just got the spirit of things instead of just describing. And sometimes when you do a visual contest, that's what you get, is a description of the picture. But this didn't describe the picture. It captured the essence of it. It took that vibrancy and ferocity of the women in the pictures and related to how the nature of, like, female animals and insects is often really powerful. When you think about, like, the lioness as the huntress and the queen bee who's in charge of everything, there's definitely a power there that she taps into in this rite. I really liked how it challenged them. It challenged the patriarchy, really, to try to face people on the equal level, join us in a level embrace, because if you try to be on those skyscrapers above everyone, you're going to topple down. You have to, be more of a quality kind of society to make it work smoothly. And it's just so empowering at places like the crown does not make us. You can try to take off someone's horns, make it seem like we're docile, but that doesn't mean that we don't have that power within us to shine. So it's very empowering piece, and I loved the way that it was all put together. I was really excited by it back then, and I'm happy to reread it now.
It's a very strong piece.
It is. Our next one on the list is by Dexter, but actually he may call in. He said if he didn't fall asleep, he would. So I'm going to skip his for a little bit in case he does call. But he was the next winner on the list. So I'm going to go to Sticky Heart and Babbler. If you can read that, I've put it on the board.
Alrighty. This is Performance of Self by Sticky Heart. The dramaturgical truth of signaling apes, membrane never permeable, this cavity of self, a bare stage set for constant recitals, never a finale, 50 shows a week you see, a triumph. In flesh and word, daily gestures of eyes, tongue, and grin, performing the ritual, disguised as herself, wearing the mask incarnate, corset strings drawn taut, this fig leaf, an impervious costume. The publicity of one sealed in woman's skin, so many eyes watching, wanting, cursing the object of her. Her mind, the press agent publishing the ads, booking dates, and selling the merch. Her eyes, billboards, lips, a catchy jingle, advertising dainty propriety, demure as lady folk ought to be, framing truth in red silk draped finery, in agreeable smiles and genteel curtsies. Lost in the improvisation, a method actor you see, hidden stage concealed yet always on display, a funny game we play, the faces we show on the big screen, finding self only to the eyes of our beholders. End poem.
Great read. This just has such a strong, kind of, I was going to say sense of self, but that's kind of a weird thing to say about a poem. But it's like, it's really well contained and just has a consistent style through it that has a natural kind of structure, even though I don't think it's a specific type of poem. It just has this flow to it that I really enjoy. That last line, lost in the improvisation, a method actor you see, hidden stage concealed, yet always on display, a funny game we play, the faces we show on the big screen, finding self only through the eyes of our beholders. I mean, that really talks about the problem of social media. We're hiding, and yet we're showing ourselves more than ever, in a way. Hiding behind our screens, but really focusing on what we display. How are we perceived? And it is a game now to, not a fun game, but a manipulative one, of choosing how we appear, only posting pictures that are the most flattering or the showing the side of ourselves that we would like, and often using apps and things to filter, to make it seem a little bit different than it actually is. And then only seeing ourselves through our beholders is like the being judged by everyone is how we, and I say we, but like not everyone, and I try not to be like this, but having a self-esteem based on what other people think. How many likes did I get on that poem? How many reactions did I get on a post? How many responses did I get to a picture? I actually don't post very much pictures, but, you know, things like that, where everyone is seeking validation for whatever it is. There's some kind of way that most people are putting themselves out there and waiting for that reaction, because that is how they see themselves now, is how people respond to them. And I think to a certain degree that's been true throughout history, but it's been on a smaller scale, because if you're in a place in a remote village that only has like 20 people, those 20 people responding to you are your survey group, and that control group is fairly small. If you're on the internet where you know potentially thousands of people are on this website, but you only got one like, then you feel rejected by thousands, and it's just a different kind of sense. It can also be deceptive of how much is actually real and who you're talking to. Where is it now? The publicity of one sealed in woman's skin, so many eyes watching, wanting, cursing the object of her. I mean, that idea of being objectified is really well explored here. And her eyes, billboards, lips, a catchy jingle. It's like every part of you has become commercialized. It's really intense. And this was, again, an art-based contest, and it was by the art of Lisa Locke Nielsen, who I'm very fond of her art, and I've come back to it a few times. I think I've done multiple contests with her art, and I believe Bobby did as well for exploring a friend. I can never say that word. Do you know what I mean, Babbler? Ephrentis? The one where you choose, you write a poem inspired by visual art. And that is a whole show that we have on Late Night Poets. And I'm pretty sure that the same artist was used there because she's just so inspiring. So I thought this was a wonderful prompt. I'm sorry, not a wonderful prompt. I give myself props. A wonderful prompt. A wonderful response to the prompt because it captures that feeling in the art, which was of the woman being objectified and being upset about it. You could see that in the art, and you can feel it in this poem. What did you think, Babbler?
I really enjoyed this piece. I took it a bit differently than you did, although I really appreciate your perspective on it, too, through, like, the lens of social media. I took it as, how do we define ourselves? You know, who are you without the labels that are put upon you from a social standpoint? You know, so many times women are described as like mothers, sisters, friends. Those are all social contexts. It's not necessarily who you are. It's labels that are put on you that determine like how you're perceived by society and even other traits. You know, oh, you're kind. Well, what is kindness if there are no other people? You know, if there were no other people, how would you define yourself? You know, people put on different personas depending on different social situations, you know, mostly based on what's socially acceptable or how they want to be perceived by others. And, you know, like, I'm not the same person here than I am with my mother or at work boss or, you know, in front of the elderly or a five-year-old. You know, those are all very different facets of myself that I reshape based on, like, a learned social code, you know. Without that context for myself, who am I? You know, who are you without other people? Like, how do you describe yourself? You know, it kind of asked, that's what it asked me, you know, who are you outside of the face of others? You know, do you know those things about yourself? Can you know those things about yourself? Or is who we are basically just a performance that we put on for social context? Because that's what people do. That's what society does. And it's not even just people. You know, it's even like my dog. You know, who my dog is at home with me isn't who my dog is with my husband or even in a park with other dogs, and certainly not around cats. You know, it's interesting because it's just, you know, how do you define? Like, is there a person aside from the social context? I'm sure that there is, you know, but, you know, even if you take words like I would describe myself as intelligent. Well, what is intelligence without other people to compare it to? You know, if there's no other people, I could just as easily label myself as stupid. You know, how do you remove yourself from a societal definition of self? And I really love the way that it plays with this idea, you know, that we're signaling apes. We're a membrane never permeable, a bare stage set for constant recitals, never a finale. 50 shows a week, you see a triumph. You know, a personality is a show. It's something that we put on for other people. How do you know how to take it off? You know, your social situations start so young. Not only that, they're, like, necessary for people. You know, you can raise a baby with food and water and shelter and all of the basic necessities for, quote-unquote, life, but if there's no social interaction, the child will fail to thrive. So it's actually, like, a requirement. So anyway, I really loved the way that this looked at this, you know, everything an advertisement, everything is something put on for other people. You know, a funny game we play, the faces we show on the big screen, finding self only through the eyes of our beholders. Because it feels so very true. Like, as you were reading it, I was sitting here thinking, like, in what context, you know, what is a way I can describe myself that doesn't involve other people? And I really kind of struggled. So I thought it was a really great philosophical write with some really wonderful lines in here. It felt very powerful and gritty, and it also felt very strong, like empowering, and yet without really giving like a to-do list. You know, it's more like a something to chew on. So I thought this was a wonderful write. Again, I really see why it was chosen for gold. This is an excellent write.
Yeah, I love all of your comments. You know, it makes me really think about this on a new level, and I always loved it, but now I love it even more. I really got to reach out to Sticky Heart because she used to enter, like, all of my contests, and she hasn't for quite a while, and I missed her writing because it's so fantastic, as you can see. So, all right, Sticky Heart, if you're listening, we want more. We want more. Yeah.
Right.
So our next come back, Sticky Heart. Actually, there was a time when before you were co-host, Sticky Heart may have been, but some stuff came up and then she wasn't available. But she was a cornerstone of the show. So we miss you, Sticky Heart. Please start writing again. Okay. I'm stuck on that. Our next poem is by Linners, and that is The Tale of It All. This one is in response to some art by Sarah Riches, which actually I believe Sarah Riches has now changed her name to Sarah Riches Road, but at the time that I made this, it was Sarah Riches, the artist. And her art is mainly women who have birds incorporated into their appearance in some way, like they're nesting in their hair or the woman has wings. There's always a connection between the woman and the bird. And they're fairly serious images as well. Apparently I have a sort of a thing for images where young women are looking very serious and have some kind of nature element. I'm looking back at these contests and seeing a trend. Okay, so this is The Tale of It All by Linners. Something dreadful is reflected in her eyes. Could be a death seen in a horrid dream, or relapse of an addiction has left her crestfallen, with the blood of her sin running down her face. What disgrace does she bear in this pose? One Poe would have drawn to illustrate a poem telling a dark tale as a black raven preens in dark iridescent sheen. He dares to reveal the clue of sin, an ornament worn in golden locks, cawing attention to the pox in loud voice, disheveled and forlorn. Wary from fear, a crow's wing spans across her left ear. What horror sown with green eyes of jealousy? Don't ask the black bird, for he swore allegiance. Nevermore would he tell the tale of it all, the appalling reason blood drips from his claws, nor the flaw in the heart of his beloved, Lenore. End poem.
Oh, wonderful read, Ephesiana. And this is an interesting take on this piece. You know, it was an ekphrasis write, and you know, this one is a little more towards that classic trend of kind of describing the piece. But it goes beyond just describing the piece. It gives it a story. Like, it gives it a tale. And not just any tale, but, like, it plays on The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. You know, like, who is this girl? It asks a story. And the story you're given is kind of a brief insight on the background of Lenore and this crow, you know. There's something dreadful in her eyes, you know. A relapse of an addiction has left her crestfallen with the blood of her sin running down her face, you know. It's a tragic story. It's a horror story. To, you know, relapse into some sort of addiction. And it leaves it pretty open-ended on what that could be, you know, but it's not a good end, you know. And her eyes are just kind of haunting, you know, a clue of sin, an ornament worn in golden locks, cawing attention to the pox in loud voice, disheveled and forlorn, weary from fear, a crow's wing spans across her left ear. You know, the crow being like this ornament of darkness and death. And yet there's almost something a little bit shielding to it, you know. Like, they won't tell you. You just have to be haunted, which very much falls along the lines of the Edgar Allan Poe poem, where it's just like this terrible sense of foreboding. And yet, you know, what is the thing to be afraid of? I think it's a wonderful riff off of the art to push it that one step further and tie it back to a classic poem. Great write, Winners. What were your thoughts, Basiana?
I really like what you had to say about it. And I think you're right. She does describe it, but she describes it in such a way that alludes to, you know, famous poetry with Poe. And it makes you think about the story, and there are very striking eyes in the image. So to think about what that woman in the image is thinking, focusing on that dread that you see in her eyes is really a smart way to go. And the little detail of the blood around the either raven or crow, it uses both in the poem, and from the image, actually, I'm not sure. But Raven works out nicely because it makes the connection with Poe. I like the part where it says, he dares to reveal a clue of sin. It's like the raven is pointing out her flaws, tearing away at her beauty a little bit to show what's within. And then it has cawing attention to the pox in loud voice. I like cawing attention where it would be calling attention. That's just, it has a similar sound, but working in the bird aspect of that, it's just, you know, it's a simple word choice moment, but I think it works really well, cawing attention. And to the pox, as in her flaws, being almost like having something like smallpox or the pox that is, I can't even remember what STD it was, but there was a historical one that they called the pox. To call her out as like someone who is poxed, maybe in terms of like in metaphorically poxed by her sinful nature or something she did wrong that she's haunted by, to have the bird pointed out is an interesting way to go. It's like it's a sign that you need to go pay attention to this woman's flaws. What horror sown with green eyes of jealousy. That gives us questions about what she did out of jealousy. But just the way that it makes all the connections to Poe is really nice, referencing Lenore and Nevermore. It uses elements of Poe without copying Poe. It has just a fresh take on the situation that combines an interest in classic poetry, but also really capturing the feeling that you get looking at the image. Thank you very much. Liners, I'm actually not sure how to pronounce it, but wonderful poem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The next one went to another. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it's good. I was going to say, where are we off to?
So I guess right after I did that one, I also did another contest about the artist Sarah Riches, because there were just too many paintings that I loved to make it into one contest. So that first one had been all pictures of women and birds, and the second one was mostly women and books or music, it would seem, but it was a connection to a more literary kind of style. And again, they all look very serious, because that's my vibe, I guess. And the winner of that contest was Pink Fairy 5. So I've posted her poem, if you can read that for us, Babbler.
Absolutely. This is "Sasha Had Given All She Could Give" by Pink Fairy 5. Sasha began to close. She felt her legs buckle. She was now on the ground in a fetal position. Her breathing came faster. She could feel a heartbeat in her throat, bare and exposed. She tried to retain a tiny sliver of her former self. Fingers clawed at her. They were all trying to take another piece. Family and friends, for she was their rescuer. When they needed anything, she was their go-to woman. Sasha closed tighter. Her skin began to bruise and welt. They all wanted a piece of her, demanded it. She had already given all she could, more than she should have. There was nothing left. No joy, no happiness, only sadness. Her hair dipped over her sorrow, concealing her pain. She wanted to be alone, demanded it. End poem.
Great read, Babbler. I like how this kind of brings up that subject of you can't pour from an empty cup or pitcher. You can't necessarily take care of others if you've given everything of yourself. You need to hang on to your own sanity. In the image that she selected, there are a whole bunch of hands that look very scary grabbing at a naked woman who's bent over in the fetal position. And I think she took those creepy hands as metaphors for everyone taking from her all the time and not realizing how burnt out she was, depending on her in various ways and always wanting her attention and her time and her energy when she just didn't have anything left to give. So I think that this was a powerful use of understanding the metaphor of the picture and making it her own. And she made it a real person. Like she gave the character a name. She made it a real story, just based on a picture where she didn't know the name. She created a full character, and that made it more personal and relatable and real. That she gave her a name and described her so well. Thank you, Pink Fairy 5.
Yeah, again, you know, that going beyond the description to really paint a story, I think, is done here. And like you were saying, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup, you know, you have to take care of yourself. You know, there are a few different folklore versions of that, you know, like the Giving Tree, or in Korea, I think it's like the Anpan Man, you know, which is a man that's made out of bread that gives pieces of himself away until there's nothing left. You know, there has to be this self-preservation. I also think it's powerful here that it's put in the context of a woman who is family. I feel like so often that's the case. I mean, there are, of course, exceptions, but, you know, mothers and women of families in particular, there's this expectation for them to give and give and give, you know, and so often nothing is given back. You know, I'm just thinking about it in the context right now, especially of Mother's Day, since it was recent, you know, is at least here in the U.S., that, you know, I know a lot of my friends who are mothers and who planned their own Mother's Day event. You know, like, you know, that take and take. But could you imagine if the reverse was true? You know, what if Father's Day was also planned by, you know, the father? I don't know too many situations where that's true. I'm not saying there aren't exceptions. I'm just saying the majority of the time, you know, it really makes me think, you know, of that load that so often women take on of being like the emotional planning workload of their families. You know, and what happens if no one pours back in, you know, what, you know, I always think of it in the context of this thing that I said when I got into a fight with an ex of mine, that is like, it's okay that I'm not your number one, but I have to be somebody's number one. Like, I have to be number one on somebody's list. And if it's not yours, then it's got to be mine. So, you know, like, that's how it works. You know, it's okay to have somebody number one as long as you're their number one back. That you can't just constantly give and give. So I thought this was a really powerful piece that really got at these ideas in a painful way, you know. And finally, like, you know, she wanted to be alone. She demanded it to just, you know, cut everyone out because she just doesn't have anything left to give. It's really heartbreaking. So it's a wonderful rite, even if it's a dark rite. I think it's the point across. So, well done, Pink Fairy 5.
Excellent comments. Our next one is Inimical by Mermaid. This one was also to a contest about art, but this art was by Paweł Kaczynski, and he has sort of satirical style. The image that Mermaid wrote to is a man who has a castle around his head. So you can just see the top of his head poking out of the castle walls, and the door to his ear is open, but the drawbridge is a cell phone. So you have to cross the cell phone to reach him in his locked-up state. So the poem is Inimical by Mermaid. Our social media motes of indifference cloud out all perceptions of tangible connections. False castles and crowned random texts so profound enforce one-way trappings of realness projections. A head full of cliche and clout rattling through days of doubt, our double or menace of luminous intentions.
I thought this was a wonderful take on this piece of art, you know, and the way that it ties in technology to it. I mean, the art itself is essentially a man that has a, like, castle tower or, you know, castle wall essentially around his head, and then uses what looks to be a cell phone as kind of the only drawbridge going in,
and it goes right into his ear, you know. And so to start out with, our social media motes of indifference cloud out all perceptions of tangible connections, you know. So addicted to technology that we're forgetting about the people. You know, you're forgetting about the humanity behind the technology. I know so many people who will say the most outrageous, inflammatory things online. And then you meet them in person and they're the nicest people. And it's like, you would never say that, like, to a human being. But because you're behind a screen, it's so easy to forget that it's a human being. And also, it doesn't feel that need for social interaction in the same way. You know, I'm really kind of an introvert. I don't spend that much time with other people. I don't like to spend that much time with other people, but I do need to do it. You know, you do start to feel lonely and isolated if you never do. You know, I can go weeks, but then at some point I'm like, okay, I actually need to, like, talk to somebody that's not, you know, a text message, because it's not the same. It doesn't fill that same human need. You know, false castles and crowned random texts so profound, enforcing one-way trappings of ruinous projections. You know, not everything you read on the internet is true. And worse than that is a lot of times people build themselves these little social networks that are just very like-minded people, and block and kick out everyone who has a dissenting opinion. And the negative to that is you really are only, you know, if what you believe is not right, you just built a circle that only has the ability to reinforce your misinformed opinion. You know, you've left no room for debate or discussion. And so the things that you're listening to that are presenting themselves as facts can be way off base just because you've given yourself, like, a lens. You know, it's like looking through a pinhole and trying to identify an elephant. You know, it doesn't work. So you could think you're looking at something completely different. You know, a head full of cliche and clout rattling through days of doubt are double or menace of luminous intentions. You know, and then you're sitting there and you have this idealized and cliche view of the world that quite honestly is probably not accurate. You know, I so often find that the truth of things is somewhere in the middle, you know. So I really enjoyed this write. I thought it was well done. I thought it was a great take on the artistic prompt. So well done, Mermaid. Okay, your thoughts.
Well, I like how you pointed out the whole thing with confirmation bias, where if you only let in information that or perspectives that you agree with, then you're only going to think that you're right and not really learn anything. And I think this having your walls around you like this leads to that. So it does a good job at bringing in those thoughts. False castles and crowned. Random text so profound, where that makes me think about how people are often sending each other little, like, words of affirmation, which can be nice, but, like, those quotes of things, like, that seem really deep, but are really just little things that people are passing around to each other. It's become like chainmail, some of those quotes, and random text so profound. It's like you feel like you're getting this great philosophy, but one-way trappings, it's not actual conversations when it's just we're sending each other little memes. And I like the, where is it now? There was a word that I really liked. Oh, I actually misread ruinous as realness, which is it is realness. Sorry, I'm half blind. It's ruinous. My bad. They're very similar words, and the text was very tiny. In any case, I really liked luminous as a choice for intentions. It's like, you know, there's bright ideas. There's a light, there's good intentions sometimes, and you can see the glow of the phone, and the intention is to only let in what you want and to be protected and to make connections anyway by having this drawbridge, but it's not working out. The road to hell is paved with good intentions kind of thing. I thought this was a great response to the prompt at hand. It really captured it. And I think that the artist, Powell, would have really liked the way that it is. The words motes of indifference clouds out all perceptions of tangible connections was really great, because motes of indifference just works really well, not only with the image, but the idea of indifference being what blocks you from getting to the truth of things is fantastic. So, thank you, Mermaid, for sharing your poem with us.
Indeed.
The next winner was actually one who we already heard from tonight. They won another one of my contests. Liners. Oh, my internet is not doing great. Babbler, can you grab?
Yeah,
yours is going down too.
No. I was saying I'll grab it for you.
Oh, wonderful! Thank you.
Let's see. All right. I put it on the board. Did you want to talk about the prompt, or do you want me to just jump in with reading?
Maybe. Can you tell what the prompt is?
This looks like another art inspired piece. The contest was called Art of Al Morgan. And the prompt is it's like a cartoonish style graphite drawing where there's a boy that's standing with his kind of shoulders up in it and this finger pressing into his head. But it's not just a finger. It's like this grouping of items that's really kind of all of these expectations, essentially. You've got, like, things, objects that represent music and sports and computer and school and math and awards and basically all of these things that would pressure somebody. That was the art that this was prompt on. And again, that's by Al Morgan. Oh, that was the inspiration for this piece. So this is Breaking Free of a Regnant Hand by Liner. His finger was always wagging in my face when all I wanted was a smile, a nod, or acceptance in my father's embrace. But I heard, "Why the hell can't you spell? What's the matter with you, boy? Don't be late to excel." Medals and trophies is what he wanted. The constant pressure was too much to bear. My spirit was left broken and daunted. I couldn't master the piano or play a guitar. He said, "You have to be well-rounded, kid, or you'll never get very far." I wanted his approval, so I got into sports, but he never made it to any games on the soccer field or basketball court. My grades fell below the level he expected. "You won't get into Harvard failing like that." His anger left me feeling deflated and dejected. Shameful, the feckless father who treats his son with such contempt and lack of love. Is he totally oblivious to the harm he's done? I found my voice and broke free of this regnant hand to become the man I always wanted to be instead of a weakling bowing to his command.
end poem.
Excellent read. I found this to be a heartbreaking story. The characters in the story were really well developed, and it has a rhyme scheme that is hard to maintain when you have such a long poem, but it was well kept. And the message and the style of it fit the image that they were writing to, I thought, really well. Having the dialogue there, and it felt like this boy's perspective, and the way that he's crunched down in the picture, like he has the weight of these expectations, is definitely felt in the words here. So I thought that was a really great response to the art of Al Morgan. Thank you, Liners, for sharing this poem with us.
Yeah, I also thought this was a really heavy write, you know. Just the scolding you can really feel in this. You know, there's this desire to be not even accepted, but to meet this expectation, you know, of a parent, to be seen and to know that you are something to be proud of, that you've met, you know, their wants for you, and to constantly have this moving goalpost where no matter what you do, you just can't breach this acceptance, because you'll just never be accepted. You know, nothing is ever good enough for them. Not to mention this really archaic view on what it means to be successful, you know. You need to spell well, you know, you need to be well-rounded, you need to get into Harvard. Like, these aren't, you know, you need to manage your expectations of somebody. You know, children are born whole. Yeah, their brains haven't developed yet entirely, and a lot of that, you know, some of that is nurture, for sure, but there's a lot that's built in that's just nature. You know, all of the potential that's in them is already there. You're not going to make them do something that they just aren't wired to do. You know, there's no reason to ever be harsh, you know. You know, the idea of parenting, at least in my opinion, is to, you know, help them become the best versions of themselves that they can be, and what can be better than happy, you know. That's all I would wish for somebody else. You know, what does it take for you to be content, you know, and happy with yourself? So, you know, it's hard when you read, like, people who grew up in environments that aren't, you know, conducive to that, you know, where you just feel like you're never measuring up. It is at least relieving, though, that in that last stanza, you know, it says, I found my voice and broke free of this pregnant hand to become the man I always wanted to be, instead of a weakling bowing to his command. You know, understanding that what your father figure, you're being, you know, the narrator here, is saying is success, you know, is being a man, is not accurate, you know, and knowing that that's not meeting these demands isn't weak. In being weak is, you know, falling for this BS. So, you know, there's at least that light at the end of the tunnel, you know, the empowerment of it. I thought it was a wonderful take on the prompt. So I think a well-deserved earned gold for the winners. Where are we off to now?
I don't think Dex is still awake, so I'm going to do his. Now, his was to the contest Little Fires Everywhere, which is a novel and then became a TV show as well. So I used some quotes from the novel in the contest, and the quotes are, anything had the potential to transform, and this to her seemed the true meaning of art. So all these quotes are by Celeste Ng, in her novel Little Fires Everywhere, she suddenly saw the solid walls penning her in were actually bars with spaces between them, wide enough to slip through. Sometimes you need to scorch everything to the ground and start over, after the burning soil is richer and the new things can grow. People are like that, too. They start over. They find a way. I love that book and that show. So that was the contest, and Dexter, the Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey, wrote this piece called Write This Piece, piece spelled P-E-A-C-E, and he did it as a song, so I'm going to play his audio.
And I'm sitting here, it's like fucking 4 in the morning. My heart and soul into this.
Taking a chance, get my confidence back. Had to make a few wins just to pick up the slack. Had to fall flat in order to stack. Had to break a man just to take a new track. And I'm over the fact this shit is supposed to happen. And Dinko was playing, I don't mean I settle for average.
Never.
Start a new chapter, get a new mattress. Cause I'd rather be sleeping than be stressing on past shit. Cause I'm better than that, man, I can't lose sight. And I'm better than these motherfuckers you like on the mic. Stay humble, stay grounded, I'm picking a fight. But I'm sick of hiding who the fuck I am to be nice. In a world where there's so much change needed. So much hate, man, there's so much greed. Sitting in a room, shit is weighing on me. Drowning in my thoughts, let me write this piece.
That's all I need, and that's all I need, and that's all I need, and that's all.
Let me write this piece.
That's all I need, and that's all I need, and that's all I need.
Put my mind at ease.
And I'm back at it again like I'm fresh off the pen. Not back slanging, I guess it depends. Fentanyl flow coming straight off the pen. Dope for your soul, here load a syringe. Let it go with the wind, see no evil. No Mike pencil dicks and no snakes or weasels. Don't seem real, then you might be the problem. Dreams is all you got when you're stuck at the bottom. And we're trying to get above them. Trying to get a pen to give you your fortune. But I think I fuck it up all out of boredom. Especially when I'm done here recording. Cause no matter what happens, man, this shit'll be fine. Till Ben with me, it's a hell of a ride. By chance tomorrow, if my body don't rise, I hope this message finds you and you find peace with this right.
I hope you find peace. Classic till shit, wherever you're at. Hope it finds you at the right time. Come on. That feel good shit. You feeling good? It's probably needed at a time like this.
Dexter for having the audio for that. I love his singing and rapping. It's always fun when he does an audio for something. You can check him out on Spotify as Sammy Two Times. This was a fun take on the prompt. It went in interesting directions. I liked and I'm back at it again, like I'm fresh out the pen, because pen as in penitentiary, but also pen because he's talking about writing. So multiple uses of pen, just like he has wordplay with piece, where he's writing a piece with, you know, P-I-E-C-E, and he's writing his piece, P-E-A-C-E. He's finding peace through the piece that he's writing. And then I also liked fentanyl flow coming straight off the pen, dope for your soul, here, load a syringe. So the idea of the dope for your soul, it's, it's the drugs, the dopamine that you're getting, but it's, the rush is coming from the writing or the reading or the listening. It's a natural high rather than the actual fentanyl, but the fentanyl flow actually flows really nicely with the alliteration. And the pen is sometimes literally a pen is used as a syringe, but in this case, it's the pen is loaded with his lyrics, with the piece that he is sharing. this has a lot of creativity and wordplay, and it has that fire of starting over, which was part of the contest and really is part of the spirit of the show, Parts That Are Parts Saint. You know, you have that darker past and you twist it and make it into something good. And he's turning his troubles into words of peace. And, you know, even if he doesn't make it, which thankfully he did, and hopefully will continue to be awesome, he has, you know, left words of peace for other people. Even if I don't rise, hope this message finds you and finds peace. You find peace from this, right? Very cool decks. I want you to make more audios. I love them. And Babbler, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that his SoundCloud was fantastic. So thank you, Dex, for including that. Well done. A little bummed you fell asleep, because it would be interesting to hear you do it live. But I understand. You know, the theme of this piece is, you know, a dark yet inspired. You know, he talks about things from the perspective of the bottom, you know, what do you do when you're down there? You know, what do you do when you feel like you're at your lowest? You know, and it hints at a lot of different reasons to be on your lowest. You know, the shit is supposed to happen, didn't go as planned. You know, all of these things that have already happened, you know. I like that he says, start a new chapter, get a new mattress, rather sleep than be stressing on past shit. Like, you can't do anything about things that have already happened, but you can change what you do about them. You can change tomorrow. You know, you can do something today to make tomorrow a little better, but you can't do anything about the things that have already happened. You know, laying in bed and being like, if only, doesn't solve anything. So I think that's a really good point to put in here, you know. You know, this I did find a little bit of humor and irony in the lines here that says, you know, I'm better than that, can't lose sight, and I am better than those motherfuckers you like when I pick up the mic. And then it says, stay humble and grounded, not picking a fight. Well, your previous line is about how awesome you are, and then everyone else is, you know, just some motherfuckers. So I'm not sure how accurate the humble and not picking a fight is. So I thought that was kind of funny. But, you know, I don't think it destroys the message of the piece. I just thought it was an interesting contradiction there. Yeah. I did like it, you know, that it's followed by the next line. It says, I'm sick of hiding who I am just to be nice. I relate to that. I can have a really blunt personality in person. And it's not that I'm trying to be mean. It's just I don't like feeling like I'm putting on airs, you know. My mom did a lot of door-to-door sales when I was a kid, and she would have me help her. Oh, I hated it. I hated selling things. Like, I hate it. Because I feel like I'm duping somebody. Like, I feel like I'm talking someone into spending money that they don't really want to spend or didn't plan to spend, and I just can't do it because it's that same kind of fake fraudulent. Like, I feel greasy. I don't like it. You know, and I think that part of my personality makes me particularly blunt feeling, and that doesn't always go over well. But it's never out of malice. It really isn't. You know, I think hard conversations are the most important conversations. You know, and then to go to this next piece, you know, that, like you were pointing out, ties in references to drug use, you know, the fentanyl flow and then dope for your soul. But it's not about doing drugs. It's
finding replacements. It's finding other sources of happiness. It's, you know, instead of fentanyl, it's writing. You know, it's straight off the pen. You know, dope for your soul. Here, load a syringe. It's not about actually like heroin. You know, it's not about like doping up. It's finding those other sources. You know, finding something that feeds your soul instead of just get too high. You know, if you're already near the bottom, like don't think lower. Like that's gonna make your life harder. You know, dreams is all you got when stuck at the bottom. We're trying to get up off it, trying to pen me a fortune. But I think if I got it, I'd get up out of boredom, which I can relate to that too, by the way. It's weird to me sometimes when I think back on it, because all I wanted when I was young was to get a decent paying job and live comfortably. You know, I wanted to own a house and not ever worry about, like, where I was going to get food or if I was going to have heat on or, you know, that was my big concern, is I just didn't want to have to worry about those things anymore, you know. And then one day I woke up and I realized I've achieved all that. And now what? Now what? You know, what's next? I've got a lot of life left and not a lot of goals. You know? It is a little bit of a, I think what gives you kind of that midlife crisis feeling. It's like, what do I do now? But it's not a bad thing. You know, there's definitely some pride associated with that too. So I think overall this has really good messaging, you know. Just because you're at the bottom doesn't mean you have to stay at the bottom. You can find ways out, but it does take focus. It is hard. It's not easy. If it was easy, nobody would be there. You know, I don't think any little kid is like, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, I'd love to be a heroin junkie. No, nobody, no. So, anyway, excellent, right? Very gritty, very hard-hitting, wonderful SoundCloud, and like a darkly inspirational piece. So, well done.
Excellent comments. The next contest was a quote, and it was, "The ocean does not apologize for its depths, and the mountains do not seek forgiveness for the space they take, and so neither shall I." And that quote is by Becca Lee. So that was the prompt to this poem by Ilix Ader. Never forgotten. Existence, a speck of dust. In the ocean, that is the cosmic plane, fleeting, floating, pain passing the world by. In this, all are the same. Judgment has never been the universe's guiding purpose. But don't misunderstand. No one is without meaning. Every piece of sand make up the mosaic of life. Every color is needed to make it radiant. The will of the cosmos rarely affects the mortal coil, but every life, a fleeing moment, or a cornerstone of civilization, is distinct, unshakable in the knowledge that their mark will never be erased. Winds will come, chipping at the edges and turning mountains into dust, but nothing is ever lost. Rain will gently push or fall in an endless torment, but nothing is ever destroyed. Change will come, but your thread in the tapestry will never unravel. Memory fails us all. Time runs past in a flustered rush. But we are made of the dust, our stars, and the dreams of our ancestors. We cannot be forgotten. Even if there is no one left to remember, time will never fail to record. We were here. We beat the impossible odds, and we changed the world. End poem.
Wonderful read. I like the grand scale of this piece. You know, existence, a speck of dust. You know, that feels very cosmos, right? I can hear the voice, you know. in my head. Oh, gosh, why am I forgetting his name? The guy who does Cosmos.
Neil deGrasse Tyson?
No, that's new. It's like Carl... Oh,
Sagan?
Gosh, I can't think of... Yeah, Carl Sagan. Which, by the way, I love space stuff, but I use that documentary for absolutely years. Years. Like, at least 10 years to help cure my insomnia. Because there was something about his voice that would just put me to sleep. Like, I could not get past the first 5 minutes of that movie and not gently lulled to sleep. Which I discovered in class, because they played it in class, and I... It's the only documentary they've ever played in class where I, like, fell asleep hardcore in class. But anyway, it has that kind of grand scale to this opening. You know, existence, a speck of dust in the ocean that is the cosmic plane, bleeding, floating, pain passing the world by. You know, and this idea of everything is temporary, and yet it's all permanent. You know, it's like time is a permanent record, and so all of the things that ever have been, or ever will be, or currently are like permanently documented in this dimension we call time. You know, and it'll never go away. Like you are, and you were, and you will be, and that's just mind blowing when you really kind of wrap your head around it. You know that things stack up in like dominoes. It's just wild. I don't want to go too much on a religious tangent here because, you know, in general, I just think, you know, in keeping the show respectful. But I have always been an atheist, and yet I've also always believed in fate, because all matter came into being like at one time. And so it's all just kind of like a domino effect, right? So everything's kind of set into stone, and it's fascinating the direction that it's taken. Like, I exist. That's wild. That is wild. Like, the chances of that are like astronomically small. So I really enjoy that. This right kind of hammers that in here, you know, like no one is without meaning. Every piece of sand makes up the mosaic of life. Every color is needed to make it radiant. Like every bit of matter matters, you know, every little iota of energy means something, even if it's temporary. You know, time will never fail to record. We are here. We beat the impossible odds, and we changed the world. So I just love the grand scale of this piece. I think it's really well done. It really gets that profound sense of what it means to be alive and be so tiny and so big at the same time. So I thought this was wonderfully done. What did you think, Phoebe?
I really liked it. I thought it was really like thought-provoking and intelligent, and it had that balance between making you think that you're tiny and making you think that you're important. You may be a tiny blip in history, but you know, each little piece of sand makes up that big beach, and if it didn't have little pieces of sand, we wouldn't have all of that going on. So every little piece matters if we make the puzzle go together. So it's, you may be tiny and not the center of the universe, but that doesn't need to make you feel insignificant. And I thought Illex really kind of captured that balance of whether we are important or not, because we are, but maybe not as important as we like to think that we are, but more important than we may feel sometimes when we're down. So I really like Ilix Ader's writing, and that's another poet who used to enter my stuff all the time and hasn't recently, and I'm going to have to look into their more recent stuff. So thank you, Ilix, or is it Ilix? I am terrible at pronouncing things right now. Poet, you were wonderful. Okay. We have an audio for this next one. So this is by Chaos. And it's called Dig Deep by K.Oz. We actually have two audios from Chaos, so I'm just going to make sure I'm in the right one.
As we walk through the valley of the shadows, born seeds didn't know the hollow, cultivating the soil, priming it beneath dirt, dark and deep, Satan's ceiling, a groove from the dirt. Every root that started spreading, tainted, fingering hell, I, a pattern on the roof of the hated. Ghostly figures kept scrubbing upon growth attempts, hell's hot heavens harass heatedly among hungry heads. Inside the soil where I did not plant myself, jealousy ran rampant, ruining my health. Kindred spirits of my seed planter tried to pull me in. Lonely, unrested spirits want new bait to call kin. My growth could be looked at as something past. Now that I reach the earth and my branches seem large, only omens climb my root system. I was just a stepping stone, pulling my planters out of the place I know is their home. Quandary should have been my name, for despite devil hands, reality reached out to me. I don't belong inside that land. Surely that's why they planted me high enough to graze their place, though not low enough that I was part of their grotesque faces. Underneath my veneer, there's struggles, pain and anguish, violent episodes and demons that I was rude with, but that's if you read body language. Why are we cast aside, like society's waste, when all we wanted was love? X-ray my bones. Ever question the breaks? No. Just go ahead and judge. You never go back far enough. Yes, my choices along the branch weren't great. Zoning out was the only way I could survive when your father served you pitchforks, fed you charred remains on a plate.
Hey, Chaos is in a few different groups with me, and she's not afraid to dig deep into her own trauma and put that a little bit into everything. This was to the quote, "You are not judged by the height you have risen, but from the depth you have climbed," which is a quote by Frederick Douglass. And I think this captured that. But also, she gave herself a challenge that was not part of the contest. And it's kind of an acrostic, so it's all through the alphabet. Every line is starting based on the letter of the alphabet. So, like, the first line, as, starts with A, and the last line, zoning out. Every single line followed that acrostic pattern, which has potential to be disastrous, because, you know, it could be really forced and awful, but I thought it turned out really great. It didn't feel like she was forcing words. She wasn't just making stuff up out of nowhere. I was really impressed that she managed to do the Q and the X, because those are the challenging ones. Like, those are the ones that you got to work in there. I mean, X-ray was pretty much had to come, but she made it work. She really did. And I thought she had some cool alliteration. Where is it now? She has hell's hot heavens harass heatedly among hungry heads. So she only did it in that one little section, but in the H line, she really went for the H. I thought it had a big haunting feeling to it, and it does hit with the dealing with the prejudice that that Frederick Douglass faced. When your father served you with pitchforks, fed you charred remains on a plate, on the one hand, it's like Frederick Douglass times, you know, the people who were against his people had their pitchforks and were, you know, awful to them. But also sometimes it's the father who is abusive. And in some cases, maybe the father is the country and the country mistreated the kids, the citizens, because, you know, he was a political advocate for African Americans and the way that they were being treated. So I think it can work on multiple levels. So thank you, Chaos, for sharing that. I love that you always do audios. Babbler, what are your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this piece. Yeah, it was the alphabet running down the side. You know, I always kind of cringe a little bit when I see an acrostic form, just because they're, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and just say, like, at least 95% of the time, that form tends to force the hand of the piece, and you lose your message to make it squeeze into this word shape. But I feel like here, especially with the sound cloud, it doesn't feel that way because the lines just kind of flow. Like, if you're listening to the piece and you're not actually reading the written piece, you may not even pick up on the fact that it does that at all. So I appreciate that this is well done from that perspective. It doesn't feel limiting to the messaging of the piece. You know, this idea that everyone is essentially a seed that's planted somewhere. And you don't really know, you know, the thing about being a seed, right, is you don't have any control over the soil that you're placed in, the sunlight you have, the water you have access to, who's planting you there, you know, what kind of competition you have in the area, you know, for resources, et cetera. You know, all of those things are really kind of out of your control. You just do the best that you can. To be the best that you can. And I think that's a large part of this piece. You know, born seeds, didn't know the hallow, cultivating the soil, priming it beneath earth, dark and deep, Satan's ceiling, I grew from the dirt. Every root that started spreading, tainted, fingering hell, I a pattern on the roof of the hated. Like, you know, to be placed somewhere, not good, you know, that's not great for growth. You know, there's a parental figure here, clearly. You know, when your father served you with pitchforks, you know, this is not, you know, the best environment. Like, it's hostile. You know, ghostly figures kept scrubbing upon growth attempts. You know, every effort developed and fought against, you know, so how, you know, how that hardness of that fight, you know, only ovens climbed my root system, I was just a stepping stone, you know, how can you possibly reach the top of something when you're battling those kinds of obstacles, and the worst part is those are all obstacles that you really didn't have any control over to begin with, you know, you know, and then there's a line in here that says, you know, that where they kind of come out in this is somewhere in the middle. You know, it's not top run, but it's also not like the dirt. You know, surely that's why they planted me high enough to graze their place, though not low enough that I was part of their grotesque faces. You know, to have grown and flourished in this kind of ugly place. You know, and then it talks about, you know, and yet you're judged on how who you are and how you've grown and the person you've become. But people don't know that the struggle that you went to even, you know, still grow at all. You know, x-ray my bones, never question the breaks. No, just go ahead and judge. You never go back far enough. Yes, my choices along the way I branched weren't great, you know, but what other options were there? You know, you do the best you can with what you have, and not everyone's given the same starting point. I think this is a wonderful write. I think it's very well done, and I think it's a wonderful response, in particular, to the quote that was offered. You know, it's not about how far you got. You know, it's about the obstacles you overcame. So, fantastic, right? From Chaos.
I love how thoughtful your comments are. You get dig deep into things. Love it.
My brain goes in weird places. It's
that's good.
Probably like ADD or something.
You know, I enjoy following that path. So I'm a little neurospicy myself. So this next one we're going to do together because it's a bit of a battle. The contest was write either a battle rap duet or a poem that uses insults from Shakespeare's writing or that would fit within his writing. So it's a Shakespearean battle. And the idea is to be funny using Shakespearean insults. And I had given them a picture of this poster that I saw that was basically a collage of Shakespeare's insults that happened within his play. So we're going to read Talk of the Town to be debated, which is by Rays 72. And I'll be R if you will be HP.
All right.
You ready?
Yep.
Okay. Debate on the adaptation of words between a rock of many words and a hard place of few characters. Ha! You dull, naive knave. You call my seclusion wilt. Mid bloom, thorn bush to your papier-mâché bouquet. Your origami perfection is birthin, clad in the buffoonery of tiny, tiny words that eat themselves hungry for thought.
Your thoughts fill poor character, a windbag of flatulence. Your words a ghost that haunts your own castle and says boo, scares only yourself. Smile, crazy smile, hand on face chuckle.
Ye of trickle of thought, you could drain a dry towel, sweat of comprehension would shower a flood compared to the drip-dry eloquence of your words, words that sink their own ships before they set sail. Even your lips mutiny your thoughts, ye pirate of language. You be but lucky that your prose doth not call on hearts or minds. 'Tis better you throw them at windows, but hark, even the streets may refuse them. Refuse, refuse? Is that way too much diction for the flaccid fiction of your thought? And thought is fictional for you, stayed by words that better count sheep to a count of 10 than number words. Beyond the length of your metered tongue, count them like a miser merchant, slowly and repeatedly, ad nauseam, to perfect your count, your word count, fool.
You wear your words like flowers in your hair, and the ball of a newborn babe's cry, all mouth and no reflection. reflection that is a well long gone dry. Your words are but mud. I would rather the croak of a toad monitor than lend an ear to your bray.
And here's a glove thrown. Let us 10 paces walk and voice our opinion en masse so they discover you as lout.
That is the smallest of sentences that has slipped your long-forked chameleon tongue, you thieving fox of words and patience. I accept your quivering proposal, and to 10 the thought.
And a quiet. Thank you for reading with me, Babbler. That was just more fun doing it two people. It was great because if you read in his AN, he said, "I tried to make it light first and thought of an introvert and an extrovert, but then I swiveled to a person of many words and to one who could fit them all into very few characters on a phone screen." So from someone who was kind of an old school writer to someone who just wanted to text. The author was like not even sure if this was good enough to be on the original show, was saying like, you know, if you decide it's worthy. And meanwhile, I gave it gold. I thought it was wonderful. I love that it gave stage direction so it could be performed. The first time I did this, I read it with Pam, and it was so good because I asked Pam to read it, and then she poked me and said, "We have to do it together." And it was so much better that we did. So, yay, Raise 72. I really enjoyed this. What did you think, Babbler?
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. You know, you've got this very excitable rock, that's just flipping insults like crazy, and then Hard Place, which really just they defend themselves, but only really halfly. Like, it's not nearly as long. I did like what you were saying about the idea of someone who, you know, wants to fit them in very few characters on a phone screen in their AN there. And it'd almost be comical to me to see it as, like, literally half Shakespeare and half text speech, because everything is like so abbreviated, like literally just acronyms for entire sentences. I love the concept of this. I think it was very creative and very well done. And it does feel very Shakespearean. You know, you've got this, the foil, and, you know, you basically got your big extroverted talker and your straight man. It was very well done. Little brief scene of flinging insults. So. Fun and creative.
I agree. And it happens that the same poet wrote the next poem that was a winner. They won 2 in a row from me. And both times I have messages from them, and it says in the AN, like, it's okay if I'm disqualified. I know I'm not really as good as meanwhile, I love them. Like, I genuinely loved these poems. So, too humble. Too humble, Rafe. This contest was about the poetry of Neil Hilborn, who is one of my favorite poets. He's a spoken word poet, and he travels around, but really I've only ever seen him on YouTube. Totally worth looking him up. He's most famous for OCD, which is kind of a love poem, but he really does suffer from obsessive compulsive disorder, and a lot of his poems are about mental health, and in that one in particular he talks about how it affects his relationships and how this one woman kind of changed the way that his OCD worked. So the quotes for that contest to inspire were, "I'm not saying you will find meaning of life in other people. I'm saying that other people are the life to which you provide the meaning. I will wield my joy like a broadsword or a fucking Nerf gun. I will have fun like my life depends on it, because it does. Love how you hate yourself sometimes, because goddamn, at least there's still something to hate. So those were some quotes by Neil Hilborn, and you could also go look at his poetry and listen to his things. So it wasn't necessarily specifically to those quotes, but that was a quick sampling that I did from him. And now I'm going to read the poem by Raise72 that was inspired by that. It's hard being imperfect. I pour out of myself tepid gasoline from a pump, Slipknot of broken pieces, tied together with a torn hamstring. This body lives 5 out of 7 days. Mine struggles through 2, wraps my phobias around me like a security blanket 7 times out of 7. I always thought I would strain foresight out of forgiveness, but both lie now, stomachs pumped, bulimic, while I floss my teeth with bitter pills of regret, rinse with a carefully dispensed, disposable cup of discontent. And every night, the window calls me to measure the city lights through their eyes. But no matter how tall or close I stand, frailties of broken society quick the bunch of fists. Realization is a poor fix, because all the other rats have jumped ship. And the rattle of my bones in this paper bag crown can only burn so many calories. Throw down one tiny gauntlet of disquiet, which may not make it through the night. Me and my supersized ego, alter ego, it's all about the mask, may not fit on this sinking bed tonight, but we sure as hell will try. End poem.
Wonderful read. And this is a really interesting piece. It was hard being imperfect, you know, to be flawed. And to see those flaws in yourself, you know, I pour out of myself tepid gasoline from a pump. You know, to view yourself as like wasted fuel, essentially. A slipknot of broken pieces tied together with a torn hamstring. You know, this wounded body, you know, lives 5 out of 7 days, so there's 2 days a week that it's just useless. And yet those 2 days a week seems to be the mental days, maybe. You know? Mind struggles through too. You know, all of the things that a struggling person is dealing with. You know, body problems, mental problems, phobias. You know, this idealism. You know, I always thought I would strain foresight out of forgiveness, and yet no. You know, both lie now, stomachs pumped, bulimic, you know, both of those things are empty, you know, all out of forgiveness and foresight. Just kind of blindly holding grudges, you know, is an interesting way to view it, you know, and in living off discontent, essentially, and just knowing that, like, everything that you've tried, you just don't feel successful, you know, you don't feel like you're measuring up, everything's a fight, you know. I liked realization is poor fix because all the other rats have jumped ship. Like, I just figured this out, but, you know, a whole lot of good that does because everyone else figured it out ages ago. You know, like, oh, yay, I figured it out. But, yeah, it would have been nice to give me a heads up. I just like the way that was phrased, you know, and to still, like, just be trying to, you know, get out of it, you know, still fighting this battle, still doing the struggle. You know, me and my supersized ego, alter ego, may not fit on this sinking bed tonight, but we sure as hell will try. You know, try to get some sleep, you know, still battle it, still try to make it through another day, another night. There's humor. There's this really rough humor to this piece. It's like a cynical, you know, humor. It's dark, you know. You can almost see the smirk that it's written with. Life fucking sucks sometimes. It's a real grind. you know, but this piece and the way that it addresses that isn't one of like horrid despair. It's kind of cheeky, which I appreciate because it's not just incredibly down. It's, you know, even all this bullshit, you know, it's, hey, it's my bullshit. And I'm still going. So I appreciated this. I thought this was a well-textured write, yeah. And I do see where you say in the AM that they called this how they said maybe someone will see how crappy this is. Like, it's not crappy. Like, stop. Anyway, I enjoyed the write. I thought it was well done. Your thoughts, Susie Allen?
I really, really enjoyed it. And that sense of humor that you're talking about, that kind of dark humor that makes such a serious topic, I was going to say fun, but it's kind of fun to explore it the way that they do. The floss my teeth with bitter pills of regret, like the wording of it makes it amusing. And that is exactly something that Neil Hilborn, the man of the prompt, is fantastic at. His poetry is absolutely heartbreaking but hilarious at the same time. You will laugh until you're crying at something that should just plain make you cry. There was one I listened to earlier today by him that he talks about waking up in the middle of the road naked, and he's talking about how he has road rash everywhere because that's the thing about not wearing clothes. And he had been in a disassociative state and went out and did something. But throughout the whole thing, it's just like this joke of like him being all road rash, being naked. He has all this serious stuff about like how he was suicidal and all these things. But all throughout it, there's like these kind of like undertones of funny. It's like, and then I just ended up flayed like a chicken, naked in the public. But like, I don't know. He manages to make it funny and serious at the same time. And I felt like Ray 72 captured that. He got that kind of weird little sense of humor that Neil has and put it into something fantastic. And I did not do Neil any justice by a tiny little crappy summary of his book. But you got to listen to the future. Which is just fantastic and empowering, but it has little funny moments between the really serious moments, and I feel like this captured that for sure. I really like the line too, wraps my phobias around me like a security blanket, and it's a little too relatable, which I think is always why I have a love-hate relationship with Neil Hilborn, because he points out my flaws, and I feel like the same with this. So thank you very much for sharing that with us. I thought it was wonderful. And you need to gain some confidence, Rays, although maybe you have because it's been 3 years. So good. our next one has an audio. It's by Eric Svensson. Except that my internet has decided to die at an inconvenient moment. So loading, loading, loading. I'm pretty sure that was to the sound of a jingle, though I'm not actually sure which jingle.
it sounded like Rawhide to me. That really late Western show.
Oh, that's... Maybe. No. Well, I mean, maybe it's based on that, but it was actually Walmart, I just realized. Get those prices rolling. Oh, my God. Okay. The things in my subconscious. This is by Eric Svensson. Said eyes to big toes. And I'm going to play the audio now.
Said eyes to big toes. Big toes dig in, support the artist's balance. Freeze blue eyes to study misty seascape. Cerebral cortex computes composition. Attuned heart intuits color application. inner eardrums interpret foghorn lament, warn solar plexus of tidal change range, bits, pieces, and body parts, harmonious coexistence mobilizes, empowers spirit that dwells within. Well-appointed chambers ensure creative space. Platform shoes won't do on slippery rocks. Long ago, coffee bean eating goats led to morning coffee with oats. What passion peruses and pursues rescinds, works, grunge, grind, bind. Sun-kissed peachy success leaves no bitter rinds. Round pegs in square holes get damaged by friction. Dissimulation of giddy-up carousel horses. Men from Mars and women from Venus. Can West and East ever meet? North and South don't think so. Do parallel lines ever meet? Find your niche. Soul fire ignited by each authentic tap dance step. End poem.
Well, that was a wonderful SoundCloud. Thank you, Eric, for giving the SoundCloud for this piece. I thought that was a really interesting take on the prompt, you know, strive not to be a success, but rather to be of value. You know, it starts with this interesting, like, each role of different body parts, you know, your toes supporting you to stand so that your eyes can see and your brain can take it in and your heart can emotionally, you know, apply you know, interpret it, and your eardrums can hear things, you know, all these different ways that you can experience the external world and how that empowers the spirit that dwells within, you know, the well-appointed chambers ensure creative space, platform shoes won't do on slippery rocks, you know, you got to dig your toes in. You know, you've got to, in order to feed your soul, you have to experience the world in kind of a raw way, you know. Long ago, coffee bean eating goats led to morning coffee with oats, you know, and that's true. The way coffee was basically discovered was watching these goats who would eat the coffee beans and be energized. And it was like, maybe we'll try them. At least that's the folkloric answer. I've heard that. Whether or not that's totally true, I don't know. You know, but be exploratory. You know, try things. You know, this rescinds what passion peruses and pursues, rescinds works grunge and grind bind. You know, all of the stress you have from working can be negated by pursuing something passionately. You know, to find other parts of life to enjoy, you know, enjoy your life, enjoy your work. Don't hate your life. You know, round pegs and square holes get damaged by friction. You know, things, people who are trying to fit into spaces that they don't belong are never going to have a good time. You know, men are from Mars and women are from Venus. Can West and East ever meet? Don't try to force things. Don't, you know, opposites might attract, but don't force them is what it says to me. You know, find your niche, soul fire ignited by each authentic tap dance step. You know, don't be concerned with fitting a rule. You know, you don't have to be something other than what you are, and to try and be something you aren't. And to try to live a life you don't enjoy, and to not experience the world around you and the things that make you happy, are going to lead to a life of dissatisfaction, you know, enjoy things. Be who you are and experience that reality. It says to me it's rather inspirational and lighthearted piece. So I enjoyed it. Thank you, Eric. And what did you think, Kaziana?
I think you said it all, everything that I was going to say. Wonderful job, Eric. And I say ditto to all that Babbler said. I'm going to try to squeeze one more in. And this is by Robert J. Tice in response to a contest about Neil deGrasse Tyson. It's called Conundrums to Cosmos. Such sights you must seclude from us, beyond majestic tapestries, enriched by myths, geometries, persistent fingers flick and fray, as hinting glimmers drift away, and light slips through loose haggard threads, and questions dance about our heads, and suppositions disappear into black holes, theories veer, towards vague equation models, guess, so no one shows or yet possesses plain enigmas you preserve behind the spectra we observe. Like planets, we play wanderers, roving wells of gravity, their lenses bending distant glow round galaxies in wormholes flow across vast interstellar breaks. A potent supernova wakes with elements of fierce surprise, new particles and probes revise. In time, such take much closer looks, matured since adolescent books, parading constellations named in dizzy fictions glibly framed, to forset facts and jolly hearts with folly's misbegotten arts. Envision Einstein beaming glee, beside him Hawking smirkingly, a colleague's wipe mad blackboards clean, remove their glasses, sigh, lean, and rise from chair, still mystified, from mysteries more magnified, toward wonders greater than accounts, so no noted science soon surmounts. Incomplete, each system's proofs, left undefined by truant truths. Then comets curve to lend some dust, as constants all were forced to trust, could constitute concealed flaws should physics disobey their laws, uncertainties prevail again to know a place or gouge the when. Contending quanta fluctuated, no neutrinos obligated, neglected sensors would agree, none speak their secrets easily. Adapting tired eyes by night, we riddle through the recondite, to sift for inklings in the dark and pin our hopes upon a quark. End poem.
A wonderful read of Aziana, and I really enjoyed this piece, you know, Conundrums to Cosmos. You know, even the greatest minds don't haven't answered every question. I particularly liked the stanza here about two-thirds of the way down that says, incomplete each system's proofs, yet undefined by truant truths. The idea that the truths would be truant, like they just didn't show up. But that's kind of fun of it, the picking across the maybes, right? That I think that's what tantalizes these particular types of people. And it also makes me think of, you know, I was listening to Neil deGrasse Tyson not that long ago, and he was talking about how, you know, galaxies can move far away past an event horizon where we can no longer, and so we'll never know what happened beyond that expanse of time. You know, how much knowledge of the universe do we not know because it's just gone? Anyway, it was just an interesting thing to think, you know, what is unknowable? I'm going to make my comment there quick, but I enjoyed the piece. Aziana.
I enjoyed it very much as well. Obviously, I liked all of these because they're the ones I gave gold to. I thought this was really intelligent. It showed a great knowledge of the content and the subject of the contest, and it's just masterful poem. We are unfortunately out of time for tonight. Another day we shall celebrate the gold winners. And thank you very much, Babbler, for calling even when you're not feeling great. And thank you to everyone who shared your writing with us. I always appreciate having poetry to celebrate.